This is a Nightlife crime podcast.
Maria Korp became the centre of public debate for a while in 2005. Her husband's mistress, Tanya Herman, had attempted to kill her. She'd been locked in the car boot for almost 5 days and was lying in a coma in hospital, and for a while there were questions about the right thing to do next, whether to keep her life support on or off. Eventually, Victoria's public advocate decided that her feeding tube would be removed, and she died a few days later. It was a pretty awful end for the 50-year-old, whose husband Joe then committed suicide on the day of her funeral. Rochelle Jackson, true crime author and journalist, is here to tell us the story of the body in the boot. Rochelle, good evening and welcome to Nightlife.
Yeah, thanks very much, Phil. Good evening.
So who were the Korps and what was their background?
Look, it's extraordinary. They were a couple that lived in central Victoria, and they were ostensibly quite a happy couple, Italian background. They were married for some time, and Joe Korp was actually decided to go online, and he first met this woman called Tanya Herman on an internet chat room in about September 2003. They actually met physically about 5 months later. Tanya was an interesting person. She was a single mum. She was working a couple of jobs. She was running a childcare centre at her home, and she was waitressing at this nearby restaurant in Echuca. And at that stage, she had no idea that this guy she was having a chat with, as you do on social, you know, these internet chat rooms, that he was married. He told her that he was divorced with a couple of kids. And Tanya was lonely and grieving. She'd lost her second husband, Paul. And so this husband had died from a massive heart attack. So when she met this guy who called himself Joe Bronte, even though it was Joe Korp, he seemed like an answer to her prayers. They exchanged mobile numbers, and they communicated by webcam and on the website. And he was completely in charge of their relationship. Tanya said that he controlled her and even the way that she thought. Now, the interesting thing is I actually went into Dame Phyllis Frost Prison during 2010, and I actually met with Tanya Herman. I was introduced to her by a former prison colleague or a prisoner with Tanya, and we met in the visitors' room a number of times, and I would then go outside because you're not allowed to take any recordings with you or notebooks. So I then would go outside in the car park and write down all the notes and my recollections and memories of the conversations I had with Tanya. And this was as part of writing my third book, Partners in Crime. And she was she seemed to me extremely normal. She was a complete clean skin, so she had no priors. And she said that, you know, when she met Joe Korp, she said he completely controlled her. He completely and utterly redeveloped her whole way of thinking. She said, he was my world. I would have done anything for him, absolutely anything. He told me what to wear, what to eat, even what to think. Right. He even dictated who my friends were.
But I mean, on behalf of Joe, it was basically a sexual relationship, was it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Mm. She now looks at it, and of course she's done her time, and she just said, how on earth could I have been so stupid and got suckered in by a guy with such a low IQ? But yeah, that's right. They'd meet, you know, she was working these two jobs, they'd meet in the nearby town, have lunch, have sex and talk. Mm-hmm. And she'd believe everything that he'd tell her. And then weird things started to happen in their communications. Like Tanya would get these emails from someone called Michael. Now, she thought that this Michael was Joe's accountant or a lawyer, but he seemed to have access to Joe's email address and he sent her emails. Now, she never knew if this was from Joe or Michael. Then for no particular reason, Joe wouldn't call Tanya for several weeks. Mm-hmm. Now, as a result, she became really depressed and she unsuccessfully tried to commit suicide. Apparently, then he'd turn up again and she'd start their intense relationship again. So I think, though, the interesting thing that I found when I was speaking to her is that her dependence on Joe was cemented when he faked his death in August 2004. Now, this was all done online in their chat room. He claimed via his online name that he'd flown to Barcelona to visit his mother, who suffered a heart attack and had then been killed in a car accident. But you know what? Joe never went anywhere. I mean, it's hard to believe, isn't it?
It's bizarre. So he tried to fake his own death. What, to get rid of Tanya?
Well, now Tanya believes it. He was testing her to see if she'd ever leave him. He faked the entire scenario. He made up online identities that contacted her. The mysterious Michael emerged again. Oh. And Joe's supposed brother, this guy called Gust, also started to contact her. So she was informed, and she very much believed that Joe had died in a car accident in Barcelona. She completely lost it and she was admitted to hospital. When she was in hospital, can you believe she got out, she went back home, can you believe all of a sudden on that internet chat site, up came his name all of a sudden. She couldn't believe it. Joe suddenly contacted her online. Now, he claimed that he'd had a car accident, but he wasn't dead. Can you believe it? He was actually all right. And he blamed Michael, this lawyer or accountant or whoever he was, for running off with the money. Joe turned up about 11 days later. Now, the interesting thing is, I suppose this is where you go, look, this is ridiculous. How stupid must she be? But, of course, there's psychological reasons. In Tanya's trial, this psychologist, Patrick Newton, said, look, Tanya had a dependent personality and a moderately severe depressive disorder. Apparently she'd been sexually abused from the ages of 8, and this led her to believe that intimacy and pain were the same thing. Mm. So, in other words, the abuse that she got from Joe was replicated the abuse she'd experienced in the past.
I'm talking with Rochelle Jackson, true crime author and journalist, and she's telling us the story of Maria Korp and Tanya Herman in the so-called Body in the Boot case, which was very, very celebrated back in the early 2000s. So why did Tanya decide to kill Maria Korp?
She was very much persuaded and manipulated by Joe, her married lover. Basically, after this scenario where he faked his own death, she became incredibly bonded with him and very much dependent. And basically Joe continued to deceive Tanya, saying that Maria used to threaten him and saying that she'd stab or kill him. And he convinced Tanya to sell her house. He convinced Tanya to swing with him with a number of other couples, threesomes and partner swapping. And then he kept trying to convince Tanya to kill his wife, claiming that he could run her over with a car or stage a bungled burglary where he'd bash her to death. Now, you know, she, in retrospect, said, my goodness, he was a real charmer. I'm still amazed myself. And I think, how on earth could I have gotten in so deep? He actually got me to the stage where I would have done anything for him. And she said it was like a form of brainwashing. So on the 9th of February, 2005, Tanya lay in wait in the garage for Maria Korp. Mm-hmm. Now, apparently, you know, Joe had picked her up in the car earlier. He'd packed her a backpack and she basically wore what he'd told her. I mean, even this sounds ridiculous. A swimming cap, a hooded jumper and dark tights. While waiting in the dark, she put the balaclava on over her swimming cap and put on Joe's runners and white gloves. She took out a long black carry bag strap from her backpack. Now, Joe told her what to wear, including the shoes and gloves, and apparently he said, so no DNA will be left, so don't worry, you won't get caught. Believe it or not, Maria walked down the garage steps, walked past her daughter's car where Tanya was crouching. Mm-hmm. As Maria opened the car door, Tanya stepped forward. She got the strap around Maria's throat and she just pulled. Now, Maria shrieked, but it was quickly muffled. Maria never stood a chance because Tanya was about 18 centimetres taller and 18 kilograms heavier than Maria. Tanya pulled the strap tightly until Maria basically lost consciousness. She was shaking and crying, and Tanya fumbled with the keys for Maria's car. She pulled off the shoes, grabbed the balaclava and the strap on the floor, and picked up Maria, dumping her into the boot. Now, she had no idea where she was going. She just drove and drove, and she was shaking, she was crying. She ended up driving from Mickleham, which is their house in north central Victoria, to Melbourne CBD in the Shrine of Remembrance. Now, she had to dump Maria's car, and so she left it there by the Shrine of Remembrance, left it with Maria dying in the boot. She grabbed her mobile phone and threw it into the Yarra, and then she ran to her brother's workshop, which was in Melbourne. As her brother Steve drove her home, Tanya confided in him what she'd actually done. Now, Joe reported that Maria was missing, and I remember even going to press conferences that he was doing where he was talking about Maria's disappearance despite the fact that he was heavily involved. She was found 4 days later. She was barely alive and she died some 6 months later on the 4th of August 2005.
What, never having regained consciousness?
Yeah, she'd never regained consciousness. And of course, there.
How was the body discovered?
It was discovered.
Not the body. How was she discovered?
Yeah, she was discovered by I think it was a park worker.
Right.
The boot was prized open, and she was barely alive. She was placed in a coma, and 5.5 months later, that, as you said, that resuscitation tube was taken out, and her life support system was turned off. It was horrendous. But in the meantime, of course. You know, there was all sorts of machinations going on. Joe's brother had given a statement to the police about his sister-in-law's disappearance, and Victoria Police's homicide squad took over. They spoke to both Joe and Tanya, and both initially denied being involved in Maria's abduction and attempted murder. But Tanya's brother, Steve, wore a wire, and he discussed with his sister what she'd done. She was arrested and charged for the attempted murder of Maria Korp, and so was Joe. Now, Tanya actually pleaded to the crimes, and she was given a 12-year sentence with a 9-year minimum.
Right.
Joe was also facing 8 charges. He was pleading not guilty. And you're right, Maria's funeral was on the 12th of August, and on the same day, Joe Korp committed suicide. He was never tried in court for the attempted murder of his wife. So Tanya never gave evidence. And I think that's one of the reasons why she decided to speak to me, and I did her story in my book, Partners in Crime.
Mm.
And she now describes him as Warpy Corpy. She said, look, I've done this crime and now I've done the time. The past is the past. I can't undo it. I have to move on. My biggest regret, she says, is taking a mother away from her children, because she'd hate that to happen to her. And she said the fact that her selfishness caused that is something she's got to live with. So, look, it's a very tragic story, and it's hard to believe the level of manipulation and deception and betrayal that went on in the background. But Tanya's now done her time. She's done 9 years, and she's now living with her new partner, who she met in jail in one of Melbourne's inner suburbs.
Extraordinary story. Yep. All right. Rochelle Jackson, good to talk. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Phil.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.